Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, this is yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I'm, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Lupo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah,
so, it's America. It's been a couple weeks, so guess what we ended up having again this week?
Let's guess. Could it be world peace? Nah, it's going to be a shooting.
Yep, it's a mass shooting. And because it was at a video game event, you can imagine we're kind of involved in this. So we will be talking about that. And, of course, the ever-so-predictable reaction to it with all that entails.
Although this one kind of throws a curveball at that whole argument, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to it. But on top of that, we got some other shit that was going down. Apparently, some neo-Nazis are rioting in Germany. And before you get, he's like, yeah, it happened, and we'll explain it. But yeah, there are still neo-Nazis in Germany. In other news, everybody often and talks about how, you know, Asia gets all the neat flavors of stuff, and that's about to go with Oreo, too. And you'll find out when. Also, we also got some entertainment news, including the now fact that Orson Welles will no longer have to worry about the fact that his last living role was in the Transformers movie.
Yep.
We'll get to that, too. We'll also get to the fact that you might not have known that, yes, Orson Welles was in the original Transformers movie, but we'll get to that. So we're going to go in on all that stuff on this new episode of Net Let's Weekend. So, Bill, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been continuing on with Shining Force CD. I think I'm just about at the end of book one now. So, it seems like the story is at a place where it's kind of looking to wrap up very soon, so unless they throw some sort of twist that I'm not aware of, I'll probably be finishing book one very shortly.
I want to say that's Sword of Hadja.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's the other one as well, so I can't remember what the second one was called, but they don't even refer to them as their Game Gear names in that one. It's just book one, book two. So, yeah, that's coming along, and once I'm done that, well, obviously I'll finish, I'll get on to book two, and then I'll finish that, and book three, which I've never played, because I didn't know it existed. So,
bonus prize!
Yeah. So, I'll be doing that. Other than that, I started watching The Expanse again. Going through season two now, so I'm trying to catch up and do season two and three so I can get myself caught up for whenever the heck season four starts. Probably sometime next year, but, you know, it's a good series, so I think I want to finish it as soon as possible. I added Ozark to my list of Netflix stuff that I need to watch. I heard that was actually quite good, so added that there and probably start watching it this weekend, maybe binge it, I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. If I get into The Expanse, I probably won't have time for Ozark, so we'll see.
And Netflix needs to list. Here's your stuff you actually want to watch, stuff that you like and kind of want to watch if time were infinite.
This is the stuff I'm actually going to get to and the just overflow pile.
You're ahead of me, though. I still need to populate a queue on Netflix.
Yeah, I really need to prune mine because I still got like Storage Hunters and stuff in there for some reason. I don't know why that's there.
Yeah, they make it really hard to look at the whole list.
Because I do know once I actually do dive into Netflix as deep as I want to, it's just going to, a monster will be created. So.
It's definitely a good idea just to go look at what's on there and just start doing thumbs ups or thumbs down on the things you've actually seen.
Yeah.
Then it'll start surfacing things populating you might be more interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As well as like putting up notifications for things. Like, oh, there's a new season of this thing that you probably are going to like.
Yeah.
Also, this is just, maybe I'm not searching right or something, but I'm seeing things like it has Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, but not Volume 1.
No, you're not. You're searching right. That's actually how that works.
It has.
That's called Disney's Jedi, about Force to take Awakens. It off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Disney's getting their own service, so they're going to be. They're just putting up the last few things they want on there.
Yeah. And they don't stay there very long either. So if it's one of those things that you actually want to watch, watch them quick because they don't stay long.
Yeah. Hey, Pat, you did make your own queue, right?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay, just make sure you do.
No, yeah, I've got my own profile and everything.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And what was that other one? Ultimate Beastmaster is just ridiculous. So watch it.
Yeah, somehow saw that's on season 3. I'm like, where the hell is 2 at?
Yeah,
I thought I just watched 1 like a year ago.
Yeah, I watched season 1 and then like 2 showed up and nobody told anybody. Yeah. Lots of good stuff on Netflix and some stuff that makes you go, what the hell is this? So, yeah, like every Adam Sandler movie ever.
They're just piling content in there and let people make of it what they will.
Yeah.
Which is a good policy for a service like that.
Yeah. And there's some good, you know, Japanese stuff in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Not just anime, but they've got, like, Japanese TV shows as well.
So. Yeah, the first thing I did when I got set up on Netflix was I sat down and watched God's Zero, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So that's been pretty much it for me. What about you?
Aquamoto Racing Utopia is something I picked up off the recent PS4 sale, and it's not Wave Race, but it comes so close that it's painful.
Ooh.
How does it look? Because I think it's originally a 3DS game.
It looks pretty damn good, actually. I don't think the water behaves quite as well as it does in Wave Race, but, you know, that's to be expected.
Okay.
But, honestly, I think if you implemented something that worked the way the B button does in Wave Race, then they would be well on their way, because that's really the only major, major gripe I have about it is that you can't, you know, pump your legs to fight back against the waves or limit how much air you get or whatever. So,
okay.
The amount of content seems to be substantially larger than that of Wave Race, so that could make up for it at least a little bit, but I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on what these guys do moving forward, because for a first effort, this is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've been seeing people talk about this 80s Overdrive game that's on the 3DS eShop that is half off right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be liking it to Top Gear. So that seems like something that would be up your alley.
Yeah, well, considering that I'm fresh off of Horizon Chase Turbo.
Yeah.
Did you ever replace that DualShock 4?
I did. I got one of the. I scored one of the limited edition Midnight Blues.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like to think that it's fixable, but I just don't have the ambition at the moment.
Mm. All right. So, all right then, Teresa, what about you?
I've been playing Octopath Warrior, a Traveler, not Warrior. Good God. I know.
Give it time. There'll be a Dynasty Warriors spinoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't really been able to play it quite as much as I want to. So I'm finishing up the chapter 2 for most everybody.
Yep.
So that's where I'm at. And I think that I've leveled up a little too far because chapter 2 is pretty freaking easy at this point. So that, and oh yeah, I did play some Civilization. I'm back to that. Big surprise, right? Somebody posted, somebody posted like the most auspicious ever starting area for their Civilization when they first hit the map on Reddit. And I'm like, well, damn it. Now I got to play again. But
do they have settings for stuff like that? Or it's like, here's the most fucked place you could start.
You can do stuff like that. You can change the amount of resources and whatnot, where it's like pretty much epic amounts of resources, which, yeah, that's great, but everybody gets it. So, you know, yeah.
I was thinking of something like where you get hardly anything and everybody else gets a lot, and it just puts you at a huge disadvantage.
That's what the mods are for.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a huge mod community for Civ, for anything on Steam, really. So enjoyed some of that. And then we've been watching Voltron. We, I think, are almost in season 4, possibly. I don't know. Shiro's back, but I don't think it's Shiro, but, you know. We'll see how that shakes out. And, what's that new one? Disenchanted. We started watching that, and we're actually, yeah. Scott and I are supposed to do a podcast about that one for one of our friends. So,
yeah, I watched that too. It's, I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, we only watched the first 2 episodes so far. And, so far, so good. Definitely think that that's going to be worth watching. And hopefully I can get it all watched before all the fall stuff starts up, because you guys know what's coming. All the shows.
Yep.
Orville and...
Yeah, I have no idea what's coming.
BoJack season 4 starts in a couple weeks, actually. So
have they done that about the way Venture Brothers was, where they would, like, do a season, wait 3 years to another season?
Well, it's animated. It takes time.
Yeah. Yeah, it does take time. But other than that, it's just been working and adjusting to that new schedule and how our lives work around that.
So, all right.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been continuing to watch Parks and Rec. I think I'm in season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie has won her election. And is sort of dealing with the sort of way difference in handling herself as far as being a city councilor versus just being somebody in the Parks and Rec department, as far as actually making big changes. Like the first thing she is fighting is for like a soda tax, which prompts this whole funny little situation where she is showing off these like drink cups. From Sweetums, the candy company in town. And it's like, oh, here's your regular size is, or as small as 64 ounce. Regular is like 128. Oh, and child size is 512 ounces.
Oh, my God.
And she demonstrates just by putting the cup over her head how big it is. And it's some good stuff. And sort of alongside that, I decided to check out The Good Place, which is also on Netflix now, I think the first 2 seasons. And that is an ABC show featuring Kristen Bell. And so it's about, I guess it's kind of like Heaven. Kristen Bell wakes up in the office of Michael, who's played by Ted Danson.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains to her that she is in The Good Place, which is kind of like Heaven. They pick 322 people. And sort of the whole way they do that is by essentially scoring your life. Everything you do gets positive or negative scores, and the people with the best scores get matched up into this neighborhood. And there are various other neighborhoods, but they're just talking about this specific group. And so the funny thing is when she gets there, she asks, like, so who got it right? She's like, oh, basically about, like, every religion got about 5% right. But the closest guess comes from a stone Canadian kid who kind of mostly guessed it, and he has like a plaque on his wall, like closest guess from 1972.
Oh my God.
That is pretty good. She gets shown to her house in this neighborhood, and it's some weird little house that's small while her next door neighbor has like a gigantic mansion. And it has like a corner where there are paintings of clowns and some weird design stuff. And she gets matched up with her real soulmate, which is this guy from Senegal named Chidi, who is interesting. But once Michael leaves, after introducing them and getting this all introduced, she's like, I don't think I'm supposed to be here. She doesn't like clowns. She doesn't like any of this. He also shows her, like, memories that she can sort of cue up to view from her life. She's like, I don't remember any of this. Finds out she's there by mistake. And what I kind of like is just learning about all the mechanics of the of the place. But yeah, one of the best things I think I like is that, based on just the general group of people, there is censorship for cursing or not.
Mm.
And obviously being a TV show, they have it on for this. And the words they pick in, to replace them is the best. So there's fork. You can figure out what that is. Shirt, bench, ashhole. It's a bunch of fun stuff. That
any 9-to-5 plane? Snakes on a plane?
No, it's all okay. It's all naturally done.
Oh, okay.
She actually says, you know, what the fork? That sort of stuff. So it's done really well in a way that I really like from the show. So where I'm at, I'm still in the first season where she has actually come clean about what has been going on, because her being not supposed to be at this place has caused some havoc. Mm. Even to the point of there being like garbage falling from the sky, and there's a whole like weird nightmare sequence after the first night where there's like flying shrimp and all this stuff, like wreaking havoc in the neighborhood and all that sort of stuff. And it's just a fun show.
Mm.
And what's fun is that you see some people from the bad place, which includes Ben from Parks and Rec. There's the Muslim girl from, what was the wrestling show you watched, Brandon, on Netflix?
Glow.
Yeah, that girl's in there, in that group. And it's like, holy crap. And they do karaoke, but to like infamous speeches, which is hilarious. They do the Nixon tapes. and there's like Mussolini speeches they could do and stuff like that. And it's like, holy crap, this is... And like, it's like actually doing in Nixon's voice. So it's not like her just reciting it, but it's hilarious stuff. And that's a show people should definitely check out. Also on Netflix I watched is To All the Boys I've Loved Before, which is one of the new movies they put up there, which is sort of a rom-com. Features a teenage girl who's aged, who I guess in this whole chaos of her older sister going to college, some stuff gets rearranged in her room, and these love letters she wrote during crushes when she was younger that were weirdly enough like put in envelopes with addresses and all that accidentally get sent out.
No!
And so chaos ensues. There's this whole bit where she sets up a with one of the boys, like a fake relationship that they're going to go through. And you can probably guess the twist that they fall for each other. And it's a fun little movie for what it is. Amazon people should check out. But yeah, it actually comes out at a pretty good time, sort of alongside, was it Crazy Rich Asians? Sort of had this good little couple movies featuring Asian actors in it that you don't see all that often. But that has been like the Netflixing I've been doing this past week. As for games, I got Donut County, and that is a really
that game is funny, crazy.
Silly game. Really stupid too. So,
did you say Donut County?
Yeah.
It's Donut County. That's what it's called.
It's very much cut from the same cloth as Katamari Damacy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not to the same
degree. In this one, aren't you in this one like you're making stuff fall down holes?
Yeah, it's a hole in the ground that moves around, and the more stuff it swallows up, the larger it gets.
Yeah.
So the same premise.
Katamari, kind of where each level is kind of a sandbox of stuff that you can pick up here. Each of the stages is kind of a set amount of stuff. So there's not really a challenge in terms of trying to get the biggest hole. You'll get to it. It's sort of more as a way to kind of have some silly fun, as well as progressing the funny story and the writing in it that is pretty good. So the whole thing that's going on here, Donut County is a donut shop, as well as I guess the name of the county that they're in as well. And so the donut shop is being run by a raccoon named BK. And I guess at a certain point, raccoons have kind of taken over the town, kind of gentrified it in a weird way. And they're assholes. Raccoons are assholes. And so he's decided that they deliver donuts. And instead of actually delivering donuts, he uses this app he got on his tablet to send a hole to wherever they're at. And he swallows up all of their stuff and themselves. And so you do like the first stage, and then it fast forwards like 6 weeks ahead, where the entire town, well, not really the town, but like the entire like neighborhood of people have been swallowed up, and they're all around this campfire, sort of like, well, what the fuck happened? They're all pretty sure that BK has done it because he's an asshole. And they come to the conclusion that every single person like tells their story of like what happened to them, how they got down to this hole, and it all starts with, well, I ordered a donut for delivery. And so BK tries to play it off as like, no, see, I actually helped him by getting them down this hole and ruining their lives, whatever. There's some of the storytelling is done through texting, which is done pretty well. There's an emoji button, which is just a duck. But also the writing on that stuff is pretty good. And it's fairly simple in terms of the goals you're accomplishing. It takes a few hours to get through. I'm working on the platinum, which is pretty easy because it's a lot of just, here's this neat thing that you may not have actually done when you played this level the first time sort of thing. I think one of the ones I did is, figured out a way to, create a secret soup recipe in the level where you meet the guy that ran the soup restaurant called Cat Soup, which is infested with bugs. And at the end, the hilarious thing is like they're like, "Are you gonna clean up your shop? You're a restaurant now?" He's like, "Nah, it's a lot of work. I'm probably not." I think it kind of at this point it's become like a secret ingredient. It's like, okay, this guy is really shitty. Yeah, it's a fun little game. I kind of wish there was sort of a more sandboxy mode where maybe they like do like a follow up where it's more about, you know, more of a Katamari like challenge to it of actually, you know, swallowing things up and trying to get the biggest hole possible. But I think the actual mechanics of it probably makes it a lot easier than controlling the Katamari ball. But yeah, it's a really fun and silly game. And yeah, it pays off really well towards the ending. And I'll look forward to hopefully seeing some more of that game, maybe like a sequel or something. That would be pretty cool to see. But yeah, it's really well done.
Cool.
And the other game I've been playing a little bit of is Graveyard Keeper, which is like, what is the farming game that did the Harvest Moon thing really well?
Yeah,
it's like Stardew Valley.
Yeah,
graveyards.
Yeah, this is Stardew Valley, but with like a graveyard and more of a macabre kind of sense of humor and such, which I think is the thing that's going to turn me off eventually, because you actually have to take care of bodies. Take them down to the morgue and process them, which ends up with you cutting off some meat.
Ew.
And you have to... I'm at the point where I need to find the guy with the meat stamps so I can sell them. And there's a whole weird thing with that. It's like... it's a lot of weird shit in here. It's just playing on like a dark sense of humor and all that. That is neat, but also kind of like... and I haven't played enough of Stardew Valley, and I need to go play that. Mm. This is kind of making me want to go play the other thing instead. I guess that's a sign that it's not as good as it wants to be. But yeah, like you meet the local like bishop who comes to the cemetery like once a week, and I'm supposed to like spruce up the graveyard, the cemetery, because. You have to actually dig up like the plots and all that stuff. I need to find ways to find the materials I need to make them better and all that sort of stuff. It's a really weird thing. But it's on Game Pass right now, so you can check it out without having to put a ton of money into it.
Mm.
Buy it. Which I guess is a good reason to have Game Pass. Mm. It's just play stuff you don't actually want. Though I think Onrush just went on there, so I can play that and kind of weirdly take advantage of the fact that game sold poorly. And now it's going on stuff like Game Pass, where now I don't have to put any actual money of my own into it to check it out. Versus buying it and supporting it, but I guess the development team has been kind of had a large part of it fired or laid off, which is a shame. But yeah, that's right. Been kind of it, dealing with the heat going up and down.
Yeah.
It was like about 90 degrees on Wednesday, then 70 on Thursday. Now it's going to be 88 this weekend again. It's mm-hmm. I'm ready for this to be done.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell me about it. All right. Well, as for me, I've been playing Octopath, and I think I'm done with it.
Really?
Yeah. I have finished all of the chapter fours. And as everybody knows, there's also and they don't really tell you, but there's like a epilogue section you can do afterwards. And I actually managed to get to that. And then I found that so it's basically a boss gauntlet that you have to go through.
Uh-huh.
And then the big final boss at the end, which is two-tiered.
Oh, boy.
And I watched some people do it on YouTube, and I attempted to do one of the boss things, and I finished it. I got it. And after you finish the bosses, you get like a sort of wall of text that sort of is meant to connect sort of whatever character that was, because like all the bosses are like dark, shadowy versions and slightly stronger versions of bosses you fought earlier, and then it'll give you a wall of text that's meant to relate sort of the whole story and fill in the blanks about, how all the stories are linked together. Which by the time you get to chapter four, those links start to show themselves.
Yeah.
And
there's some really cool stuff in the individual character epilogues.
Yeah. And then, I finished that character. I finished that boss and I was like, all right, it was a long, grueling one, too, because his hit points were like 180-something, 180,000. And then I realized you couldn't actually exit the area. Like, if you die, that's it. You have to go back and start the whole thing over again. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and I decided to sort of watch some of people doing it on YouTube, and I was like, all right, I'm done. I can't get any... This is it. I can't get any further than this. All I will say, though, is if you want to actually attempt it, you better not even think about doing it unless your party is all 70 or above.
Yeah.
Because, if you think, like, the actual fights with the bosses are bad, the final boss has a insane number of hit points. And, like, the one I saw on YouTube, like, all the characters were, like, 72 or above. And the whole battle took about 45 minutes. So...
I thought you were like, saying they wiped.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yep, okay, I'm done. I will officially bid Octopath Traveler adieu. But, now that I'm done with that, I'm probably going to go and get Divinity Original Sin 2 Definitive Edition for my PS4.
Yeah, I got the update for that on PC, which prompted me to just delete it and re-download it.
Yeah.
That was a lot easier than finding the space so I could do the mm-hmm. update.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing that happens these days.
Yeah. But Octopath was really good. Once I got my characters up to a certain level, I was able to get through the rest of the Chapter 4 bosses pretty quickly. Basically, like, really the last really major, like, one that really gave me trouble and ended up being the last one I fought was the Ogre Eagle. And that's mostly because he has this move called the Toxic Rainbow that every turn will slowly decrease the total amount of hit points that your character can have. So, but I finally beat him. Basically, I had to take Therion and just go to different towns and just rob fuckers blind. But I did it.
There's something deeply satisfying about that, though.
Yeah. So other than that, I've been still been playing Death's Gambit. I've started working on my review for it. I'm going to try and get it finished tomorrow. But yeah, it's good. But it's going to your whether or not you like it is really going to depend on some key factors, and I will be more specific about that on the review. But basically, you know, just be prepared to, yeah. If the game has one massive issue, it's that it's a Dark Souls clone on a 2D plane. And the problem with being a Dark Souls clone on a 2D plane is that, unlike in a regular Dark Souls clone or, you know, Dark Souls itself, your actual movement is pretty limited. And some of these areas that you fight these bosses in, and some of them aren't terribly big. Hmm. So, you know, that's the big one. Other than that, though, yeah, it's pretty good. Of course, it's everybody's going to be going to be comparing it to God. What was that other game that came out like right Dead around? Cells. Yeah, Dead Cells. Because yeah, and they do. You know, it's just an inevitable. You know.
Yeah.
But other than that, school stuff, basically. I'm now doing the medical terminology part of my studies, and holy shit, that is some brain-bending stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised your brain is still occupying your head at this point.
Yeah, because, like, there was a whole segment about, like, how these things work. Like, okay, the suffix and the beginning, you know, the suffix's definition never changes, stuff like that. And then, like, learning some of the common suffixes and beginnings for words and what they relate to. Because, you know, this is part medical terminology, you know, it's all very specific to, like, certain parts and certain ailments. Hmm. You know, like, for example, meningitis. Hmm. You know, that is inflammation of the what?
Brain.
Yes. Let's see, histology. What is that? That is the study of the urinary tract.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, stuff like that. This is also the first point where I've actually had some reading assignments to do as well. So, and it's the reading assignment is from this textbook that's like 800 pages long and weighs like 12,000 pounds. But it's all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I've been doing this week. So yeah, I guess that's everything. Is everybody got anything? Anybody got anything they want to add before we move on?
Oh yeah, Donut County has a great thing called the Trashopedia.
Uh-huh.
It has descriptions for every item you suck up in the hole.
Exactly, and like they do in Katamari Damacy.
Except they're all humorous as hell. I posted again, a link to there's a link to in the chat of one of the trucks where it describes the dumpster you can drive.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to download this now.
It's all stuff on that humor. I think it's just full of birds and all this sort of hilarious shit.
Yeah, okay. I'll definitely gonna have to download that game because
I just want to do a YouTube video just going through each of the entries in the Trashopedia.
Mm-hmm.
Because that all needs to be documented thoroughly.
Yeah, and mean to hell and back. But all right. Well, in that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, last week we had kind of a somewhat heavy historical subject, which was what pellagra was. Which, by the way, I forgot to mention this. Pellagra actually affected my family once. My great uncle, his dad came down with it once back in, I think it was 1920. And he actually tried to stab my great-great-aunt because he thought she was Satan.
Okay.
Yeah. And then fall came and he was completely okay. You figure it out. But so now I decided I'm going to do a subject on something a bit more lighthearted, something a bit more not as hardcore, something that's actually quite nice and something I think we can all agree on one way or another. And that is the subject of steak.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I agree with this so far.
Steak. Let's face it, it's a thing we love. It's, you know, it don't matter like what type of, what degree we like it in, how we like it prepared, we just love to eat that shit, you know?
Yeah.
For my money, I'm a ribeye guy myself. In fact, I'm pretty much okay with just about every cut of steak, except for filet mignon. Filet mignon is really fucking overrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
Because, I mean, it is true. It's, like, the tenderest part, but the problem is that there's just no fat in it, like, at all. It's so lean that basically whenever they serve it, they have to add to it to make it taste like something.
Basically.
Yeah. But it's not actually about steak itself that I'm going to be talking about very briefly here. No, it's about something where it's a type of event that used to be really common up in the Northeast. In fact, occasionally you'll still see them in parts of New York and New Jersey. And it's just one of those ideas that's just at the same time so brilliant and yet so simple that you're absolutely convinced. It's like, how come nobody ever thought of doing this more often? Because it makes the perfect sense. It's called the beefsteak banquet. And it is basically a prepaid banquet that you go to for endless beef tenderloin and beer that you eat with your hands.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd pay for that.
Yeah, basically it started, basically it originated in New York in the 19th century, you know, 1800s. And basically a lot of times it was put on by political organizations, usually anything related to the Democratic Party. For example, Tammany Hall, the infamous Tammany Hall, they would do beefsteaks as fundraisers. They were actually very common. And actually, they were very common well into the 1930s and 40s. In fact, apparently it was such a big deal that it would actually control the price of beefsteak, depending on whether or not they were having a beefsteak banquet or not. Prices would go up and down depending on what they did because it was so much beef.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's endless beef tenderloin. And what happened is eventually two different styles basically developed. Both of them, though, had a very had some common denominators. For one thing, the primary attractions was, of course, the beef and the beer. Is like the two greatest B words in the English language. And the beef would be served. It would be served on these pieces of bread. And depending on whether it was on the east side of New York or the west side of New York, it would either be day-old bread or it would be fresh toasted bread. Depending on the, and again, like I said, two styles. And both of them were actually aimed at two different classes of society. For example, the East Side banquets were mostly working class types, and they tended to be, you know, so the food and the manners, for lack of a better word, were basically very working class and immigrant oriented. basically everybody, basically they would serve, you know, sliced beef short loin, beef kidneys, ground beef trimmings, you know, gravy. Sometimes hamburgers. At one point, supposedly one East Side Beefsteak included that they served about 3,000 pounds of steak and about 1,300 pounds of beef kidneys wrapped in bacon.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, endless beef and endless beer, which meant people got drunk off their asses. however, there was also the West Side Beefsteaks, and these were the quote-unquote gentleman-only establishments. They were a bit more upper crust. People wore their suits. And instead, and other than the beef, they would also have stuff like crab, baked potatoes, lamb chops. And on some occasions, they were even allowed to use disposable silverware. But they had to eat the beef with their fingers. And as for the actual beef part itself, well, you're thinking, well, goodness, if they're eating all of this with their fingers, I mean, that means people's hands must have gotten pretty greasy, right? It's like, what, so were there napkins? There were no napkins. Instead, what they did is that they handed out paper aprons to every person who was involved, and they would just wipe their hands on the aprons. Now, these days, eventually, they kind of fell out of fashion, of course. Occasionally, you'll still see them pop up. Mostly the ones when they still show up, they still operate the same way. You pay a set fee at the door for your tickets, and then you come in, and you get an apron, you sit down, and then you'll get like some starters, like maybe some fried potatoes or some salads. And then, of course, the beef and beer shows up. And I have linked a Wikipedia article, and you'll notice the way that these work. They'll put the beef tenderloin, and after they're cooked, they'll dip them in a sauce of butter and Worcestershire mixed together with lots of pepper, and they'll serve them on these slices of bread. Like I said earlier, and now these days, the modern ones, all the bread is toasted fresh, so they don't do the day-old bread thing like they used to do. And you also notice, at times, people don't actually eat the bread. Instead, they'll pile it up in the middle of a table so that they can keep count. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could hang out with these people.
Yeah, this is like, it's like one of those things, it's like, why don't we do this more often? Because it's like, why didn't it ever grow out from New York? Because, like, I could totally see a restaurant, like, completely just, basing itself on this business model.
we would run out of cows.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the cow would go extinct in the United States if we did that. Hmm. But, yeah, the beefsteak banquet. It was a thing. It's kind of still a thing. And now you want to start one. And that has been Brandon's Random Factoid.
No, I like the ambition. I just want to find one.
Hmm. There's one. There's a couple that they do regularly in New York, and there's like one that goes every year in New Jersey.
Hmm.
Let's see. For example, Brooklyn, for example, has a biannual beefsteak. There's also another one by a couple of Wesleyan University graduates. And there's also one in Los Angeles to raise money for the LA Food Bank that's been going on every year since 2011. So, yeah, They're still kind of around. They're just not as widespread as they used to be. They probably also cost you an arm and a leg, too, let's be completely honest. But all right, so it's now time for the show proper. And unfortunately, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are the people and kids of this particular town who bullied a 90-year-old queer kid to the point of suicide after he came out to his mom.
So this happened in Denver.
Denver, Colorado.
Yep. Over the summer, he came out to his mom, only 9 years old. So, which is kind of cool that he kind of knew that early on.
Yeah.
Kind of confide in his mom well enough to tell her. But started fourth grade, and 4 days in, he killed himself because of bullying at the school. Even went as far as to tell him to kill himself and all that. Yeah, this shit is awful.
Really not much more to add to it. I mean, I mean, it's pretty well known that kids are a little shit, but...
Yeah,
they're adults without the filters to say, don't say this stuff, for the most part.
Well, that and at that age, if they're nine, they also don't have context of what they're saying.
Yeah.
For the most part.
But also they pick that stuff up from parents.
Yeah.
TV, YouTube, all that stuff. Those are
consequences for the most part.
Yeah.
And there's some heartbreaking lines in here. His mom said here, he went to school and said he was going to tell people he's gay because he's proud of himself.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, school, the school culture is just really toxic. And somehow we need to fix it at some point. But it's also, I guess, a symptom of society as a whole.
Yeah.
Yep. Too many people don't want to fix it.
Yeah.
No, they don't. And, you know, as we'll say this often enough, bigots aren't born, they're made. And, you know, these kids definitely picked it up from either their parents or from something they saw on TV or probably even something online.
Yeah. Because, YouTube is great of turning your interest in good things into, here are the bigots related to this thing.
Yeah.
It's Gamergate. But, yeah, it's a sad story. Really not much more we can add to that.
4 days is all it took at school. I could just imagine what they said to him. That's mom talking. My son told my oldest daughter the kids at school told him to kill himself. I'm just sad he didn't come to me.
Yeah. But, yes. So if you want to look into more on that, we got it linked. It's very sad, but, you know, it's like I said, kids are malleable, and they're also basically magnets. They, you know, absorb everything around them, and that includes...
And they don't know what they should or shouldn't keep to themselves.
Right. And, you know, as a parent, it's you don't want to tell your kid, oh, don't admit to that. But there are a lot of things that you tell your kid, just don't talk about that at school. Don't mention this to your friends. You can't talk about that. You just can't do it. You can't open that can of worms. And it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's not the right thing, but it's the thing you do to survive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the things that happen to you that you try to write off as just, oh, this happened because of me, even though it's not because of me. It's because of that asshole. Decided he didn't like something about you. Decide, you know what, I'm going to fucking do this thing.
Yeah.
And then you realize years later, oh, that actually wasn't something meaningless. That was actually something that maybe if you tell them, could have gotten them kicked out of school.
But in order to do a bit more of a positive story to move on there. Weird Al Yankovic, you know, he's been a part of our lives for a long time. He's been around since...
He's been mid-80s. In the industry for, you know, 30, 40 years now.
Yeah,
he became famous in the early 80s. In fact, I'm pretty sure he'd been doing stuff since 1979. But,
yeah, with the Dr. Demento show.
And I know he was also a college DJ, too, and he would just... there's a story I heard once about where when he was doing college radio and for his college, and he was wanting to like play more sort of off the wall comedy and alternative stuff, but his superiors told him, no, you got to play the classics, got to play the hits, and so he'd have to hear like Air Supply or something like that, and nothing against Air Supply, I like Air Supply, but. He would. So what he would do is, okay, so you got to play Air Supply, but they didn't tell me I couldn't play it backwards, or play it with like, chicken noises overlaid it, But anyway, the point is, after so many years and people constantly asking why it isn't there, Weird Al finally has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yep.
And well-deserved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had Dr. Demento there to help celebrate. Also, Thomas Lennon. You might know him from Reno 911. He talked about how there were two fans specifically, Dave Rossi and I think his wife, who went to the Walk of Fame were surprised he wasn't there and sort of raised money to sort of petition the people that run that whole thing to let him in, and got denied for 12 years. And finally, they got in. But yeah, he also had a great joke. Please don't pickaxe my star. I know it's all the rage these days, but that's not cool. Unless at some point in the future I do something unfathomably monstrous and evil, in which case, sure, fine, go. Okay, go ahead.
Yep.
But he also joked, limit yourself to spitting and urinating. Have some class, people. Obviously referencing how somebody used a pickaxe to destroy Trump's star.
For like the second time, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they moved it.
Eventually they're going to stop putting that back in.
Well, the first time it got jackhammered, didn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. They moved it to another place, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, he's a part of the music industry that is just criminally undervalued. Because he's outlasted anybody else that tried to do what he's done.
Yeah, and he's managed to stay relevant for 30, 40 years. Like,
yeah, I want to say Weezer had him on recently to do their cover of Africa.
Yeah,
Because
they've been doing that recently in their shows, and he came on and did a show.
Yeah, he also, remember, his last album was like a number one hit. So yeah.
Mandatory Fun, I believe.
Yeah.
It's a really good album.
And yeah, he does like occasionally just pop up in other people's videos random reasons. Like, okay, good example. So recently I started watching the videos from probably the last band I ever expected to actually enjoy, just because their one hit song was just so ubiquitous in 1998 and 1999 to the point that it became a running gag. Anson.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Despite whatever you may think of that song, they've actually grown up into a pretty solid power pop band.
Yeah, unfortunately, they have.
And which means that they're known for that one song that they're known for, unfortunately, tainted their whole career. Because they're actually pretty good now, which is the worst thing, because now you have to admit you're a Hanson fan.
Yeah, and for people that like Hamilton, he did a polka medley version of the show called the Hamilton Polka.
That's incredible.
Definitely people should check out if they have not seen that.
Yeah. All right. And finally, with that out of the way, we now have to go on to the proper show proper. And of course, we have to start with the one death that everybody was talking about, mostly because our current president is such a spiteful ass that he couldn't come out with a way to honor it properly.
Yeah.
Senator John McCain finally passed away at the age of 81 after his battle with brain cancer.
Same way that Ted Kennedy went out, one of his dear friends.
Yep.
Which is kind of crazy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Had a pretty full life. Getting cut short by this kind of way.
Yeah. So John McCain was a very mixed individual several different ways. It can't be ignored. Yes, he went to Vietnam. He was captured by the Viet Cong. They kept him prisoner. He was there for 5 years, being tortured pretty much nonstop. He was given a chance to be let go go because they found out his dad was an admiral, and he said, no, unless the other guys go, I'm staying. So, you know, that takes balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, like serious balls of steel.
People we've had in Congress or the White House.
Yeah. He then, of course, came back, ran for Congress, and, of course, promptly became a Republican. And then went on to do all the things that Republicans do.
Yeah. he's one of those people that is the prime example of the, hey, be civil while we do all these terrible things.
Yeah. He was one of the worst warmongers.
A few good things he's done.
He was one of the worst warmongers in Congress. He was downright... He made light of the suffering of the people in the Middle East. That whole bomb, 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 Iran joke that he did when he was on the campaign trail. You know, he was constantly lambasting the Obama administration for apparently trying to bring some of this shit to an end. And of course, you know, he was pretty much in the pocket of the pro-life kooks. And of course, he probably wrecked any goodwill he had left when he had his long obsessive campaign to keep gays out of the military, which of course he eventually lost.
Yeah.
As for like the handful of good things he did, well, the last big one he did was basically go into Congress and do the deciding no vote in stripping Obamacare. There was him standing up against the use of torture.
Generally just being a thorn in Trump's ass until his last breath.
Yeah, so much so that he specifically asked that he not attend his funeral.
Yeah, him and who else was Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin
wasn't supposed to be there either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But he also invited Obama and George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
both people that defeated his hopes of becoming president.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, his probably the other big thing he did was McCain-Feingold, which was the campaign finance reform bill that he did when he teamed up with Russ Feingold, which of course basically no longer exists now, but it was one of his pet issues for a long time, and he teamed up with Russ Feingold, probably one of the most progressive people we've had in the Senate in a long, in many, many years. That's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously,
No, just going to say, like, last week we mentioned that he was stopping his cancer treatment, and, well, now we know why.
Yeah, it was like within 24 hours we got the news that he had died. So, but basically he leaves kind of a mixed legacy behind. And it's not like – and, you know, obviously his family has lost a dear member, and let's be honest, I mean, we've all lost family members, and – you know, the grieving, the pain takes a while to heal, you know? But the thing is, I got kind of sick of watching all these TV anchors and politicians just sort of bow and kowtow to his memory like it was completely spotless or whatever. And I just, I got fucking sick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when a lot of those were shitting on him the couple days before.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And then you have...
It does turn your stomach. Nobody likes somebody who's two-faced.
Yeah.
And the only reason you even do that is just the way that Trump and the White House has reacted by basically trying not to do anything.
Yeah, basically doing everything in their power to try and ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to put the flag at half-mast. He sent out his, you know, his condolence tweet, and it didn't even mention John himself directly. It was his family. And then when they were going to put out a statement about, when they were going to put out an official statement talking about him being a war hero, Trump specifically squashed it on that very issue because he's a petty asshole.
Yeah.
And plus, I think he just hates the fact that people aren't paying attention to him, and he's, You know, he's a malignant, narcissistic asshole.
Yep.
Yeah, running with the dictator's playbook, basically.
Yeah.
I'm surprised a lot of people aren't seeing that.
Oh, they're seeing it. People are starting to see it. A lot of people already saw it, but those numbers are growing now. Disapproval numbers have officially spiked at 60%, so...
How they got that high, I'll never understand.
Yeah, right.
So next up is the other story we got to talk about, which was the shooting in Florida. It was a EA-sponsored Madden tournament.
At
a game bar. And the shooter was a participant in a contender in the tournament who was lost early, apparently. And, we have footage of him when he was playing, and he looked drugged, or he looked off.
Yeah, and I think since then people have sort of gotten a better idea of his history. He has mental health issues.
He's had a lot of mental health issues. I think he was admitted to psychiatric wards at least twice.
Still able to get a gun license pretty easily.
Yeah, he was. He got the gun, I think, from Maryland.
Yeah, he lives in Baltimore.
Yeah. And Maryland's gun laws are notoriously convoluted, so...
Yeah. But also helped out by Trump stripping the mental health aspects of the gun control laws.
Yeah.
We do have...
And it also is the fact that we basically got a good chunk of this shooting captured on live stream.
Avoided watching the video and was looking at articles to put in here, and CNN was just auto-playing it. I was like, oh, that's not what I want to see or hear. Mm.
But basically, just so you don't have to watch it, I'm just going to sort of briefly describe it. They don't actually show any footage of him or any shooting. The actual live footage outside of the game cuts off just as the shooting is about to start. Pretty much the only sign you
can
see. Yeah, and the only sign you can see that something's about to happen is that the dude's the gun, his laser sight, briefly flashes over the dude in the hoodie. Other than that, all you hear is bangs and groaning and screams of pain, and that's about it. Very disturbing to watch, obviously, but
yeah.
So of course it happened.
Two people dead.
The gentleman in the hoodie. Yes, he was killed. How many people? Yeah, the shooter committed suicide by gunshot.
I think there's nine others that were injured.
Yeah,
even some of them are basically, I'm done with this.
Which makes
a lot of sense.
Because apparently...
EA was done with it, too.
Yeah.
They canceled the rest of the tour.
Yeah. And so after it happened, we immediately get the responses that you would expect from everywhere.
Did you see Dana Loesch?
I did.
If this wasn't a gun-free situation, this would not have happened. It's like, no, it's an understaffed security.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the main issue. And you saw a lot of Evo and a couple other of the big people that set up esports events.
Yep.
They said, "Yeah, we're gonna double down and rethink our security for the future."
Yeah,
it was still kind of weird being at Evo, considering that that was where, like, not even a year ago, the biggest mass shooting in American history took place.
Yeah, in Vegas.
It was the same building.
Yep. And then, of course, all the pundits on Fox News were talking about the dangers and evils of violent video games, even though, again, this was Madden.
Oh, they have to ban all sports games.
It's going to take some verbal gymnastics to get to that point.
Oh, yeah, it's digital CTE.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me that's actually something they tried to sell.
They're not that stupid.
No,
yeah.
They are.
But once again, everybody trying to blame everything but the most obvious answer that you could come up with, which was the fact that a very mentally ill individual was able to very easily get their hands on a firearm.
Yeah.
With a fucking laser sight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
the people that set up these events need to not take for granted that this stuff can happen.
You know, at this point, we now have to actively recognize that there is a very vile and toxic area of America's gun culture that really needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, you know, like, look, this doesn't happen anywhere outside of the United States.
Not for this.
Or hasn't happened in,
not to this extent,
in many years. Australia had their last major shooting in the in what was it? I think it was like the late 80s, early 90s.
About 20 years ago or so.
Yeah. Canada, the last big shooting they had, only like one or two people.
Well, we had one in Toronto a few months back, but
yeah,
not to this extent.
Yeah, you know, the rest of the world, you know, it's not, and it's not, it can't be the media because the idea that we do, you know, they have all the same movies and the same games, the same music, and in at least one, some cases, they have a high, you know, their number of guns per household is actually higher than ours, and yet somehow they don't have this problem.
How do they manage not to kill each other all the time? This cannot be rocket science.
It's the fact that when you get a gun over here, you also have a lot of courses you've got to take on actual gun responsibility.
Exactly.
And gun ownership and proper trigger discipline, which, by the way, is one of the biggest Achilles heels of a lot of these gun nuts, is that their trigger discipline fucking sucks.
Hmm.
You know, like, what are the key rules of having a firearm? Never leave it around loaded. Never always make sure the safety is on. You know, don't point it at something unless you intend to shoot it.
Yep.
And also, never have your hand or finger anywhere near the trigger unless you're getting ready to fire.
And,
you know,
lock it up.
You know, this is simple shit that my dad taught me when I was 7. And apparently these neckbeard assholes can't get it through their fucking heads.
You can probably search the news for the kid gets a hold of the gun and shoots themselves or one of the parents or whatever.
Neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Alright, so moving on. We got another story about death that actually has a good ending, relatively speaking. A cop in Texas by the name of Roy Oliver killed an unarmed black teen, and this week, he was officially sentenced to 15 years in prison.
And a fine of $10,000.
Yep.
So, we got one.
Yeah.
Not
got one.
Now we need to turn this into momentum.
Yeah. Now we actually have precedent that we can use.
Yeah.
Because,
so the kid was a high school freshman, Jordan Edwards, did not have a gun on him. I guess he was in a car with some of his friends. The cop... Roy said it was moving aggressively towards his partner and just fired into the car.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great way to de-escalate the situation.
Nope.
How do you move aggressively towards the guy's partner when you're in the fucking car?
I think moving the car.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
And first of all, for the record, if you were afraid that he was fixing to, like, dash off or something, you don't shoot into the fucking window.
You blow out a tire.
Yes, you blow out the fucking tires, but no, that's not what he did.
Let's see, the district attorney described Oliver as a killer in blue, violated his oath to protect citizens. Prosecutors sought a sentence of at least 60 years, while the defense argued for 20 years or less. She wished Oliver's sentence was much longer, but she respected the jury's decision and realized a guilty verdict is rare and at least the base result they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a guilty verdict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was a trial by jury, so that is often a hard thing to get a jury convinced.
Yeah.
Because
they
often
especially to convict the
cop. Our job is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of defense. It's like, yeah, it is, but it also comes with responsibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, then. Well, next story after that. One of the biggest issues that's especially been a massive problem for millennials here in the U.S. is student loan debt.
Well, right here. Like you skipped a couple.
Oh, did I skip? Yeah, I probably skipped a couple. Sorry. I mean, it's still a fact. It's still one of the problems we got is student loan debt, but that's not entirely relevant to this next one. Yeah.
Like student loan, it'll stick around for a little
bit. So, yeah, but anyway, we had some more primaries this week, including a couple that completely surprised some people because basically it showed that the momentum that started with Ocasio-Cortez is not just a one-off.
Yep. Florida Democrats primary for the governor race is went to
Andrew Gillum.
Yeah. Pretty surprising, especially being a black man.
Mm-hmm.
There's the second black person that's running for governor in the South.
Yep. There's Stacey Abrams, who I will be voting for this November.
Yep. He will be running against, who is it here?
Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, who pretty quickly essentially called him a monkey the next day.
Yeah, it was you know, we called them dog whistles for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, we knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah. Tries to play dumb, like, no, you equated a black man with a monkey for a reason.
Yeah, and it especially is telling when we find out that the dude was basically an admin for a racist Facebook group.
Yep.
Hi.
Yeah, and Andrew Gillum is a Bernie Sanders-backed progressive who is, you know, going on the Medicare for All thing, as well as a bunch of other stuff like that.
Yeah, he was mayor of Tallahassee.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep, so he definitely has experience that shows he could definitely be governor.
Yeah. For the record, going to try and use, like, the statistics about crime and shit. They're fake. Crime actually went down during his tenure as mayor, so Tallahassee's actually better off now than it was before him, but you know, they're going to, I mean, if what we saw already from DeSantis this week is, it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, because there are some racist group in Florida's doing robocalls, trying to convince people not to vote for him.
Yeah, by having some dude pretending to be Andrew Gillum with, like, an over-the-top minstrel voice with jungle noises in the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
People suck.
The organization, I think, is called Way to Power or something like that. It's a neo-Nazi.
You know, occasionally I just kind of stop and think that maybe Thanos had a point.
Yeah, Thanos was right.
Also, I'm pretty sure Way to Power actually isn't even situated in Florida. They're situated in, like, Idaho. But
Yeah,
this is definitely timed. And
Let's see. Martha McSally won the Republican primary to take Jeff Flake's spot.
Mm-hmm.
She is going up against
Martha McSally, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. For those you don't know, remember who she was running up against? Kelly Ward?
Yeah.
That crazy bitch who tried to say that, you know, McCain specifically decided to time it to end his treatment so that they could create a bad narrative about her words.
Yeah.
But there's even better news to come out of that one.
Oh, yeah. Because guess who?
Very distant third.
Joe Arpaio.
Yep.
That dickhole sheriff?
Loser.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he lost bad. Yeah, he lost, and he lost bad.
Yep, let's see. There are a couple states in the Tornado Alley that are have Democrats that are potential winners for the governor races.
Mm-hmm.
Oklahoma and Kansas. Oklahoma has their Republican governor is term limited, so they're on the way out. They nominated a businessman from Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Who has no political experience over the mayor of Oklahoma City. So the Democrat is former state attorney general, Drew Edmondson. Mm-hmm. And so he seems like a potential experienced candidate that could definitely take it.
Mm-hmm.
As we've seen sort of the blue race, the blue wave come to
blue fruition. Wave's coming, folks. Prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'd like to mention that so far, DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, they've ran like 30-something candidates all over the U.S. For office, all of them Democrats, and so far 26 of them have won their primaries. So,
yep. Wait a second.
DSA, a very new entity relatively compared to all the other established parties that...
Actually, DSA's been around since the 80s, but they just suddenly – it's just now because of, you know, the Bernie bump, I guess you could call it. They've started growing exponentially.
Yeah. People are getting tired of the establishment not directly turning to, like, the Green Party.
Yeah. Well, there's the thing that I wanted to point out, because who are we not seeing – who are we not seeing in all these races? The fucking Greens.
Yeah.
Every 4 years, they like to field a presidential candidate, but they can't be fucked to get involved with the municipal or state level races.
And that's why they.
And this is
the
why they were. They're always going to be losers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is the work they don't want to do.
They don't want to do the legwork. Neither do the libertarians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Neither
of them. Reason the DSA is because it's for one thing they're a very big tendency, very big tent left wing party. Your average DSA member will be everyone from, say, a old school New Deal Democrat to hardcore Marxist-Leninist and everything in between.
Hmm.
And they're willing to actually get down and do the legwork.
Good.
Because, the whole point of socialism is, working class politics. And that's actively who they've been trying to reach out to. And a lot of times they've been succeeding. So
good. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just sick of these weekend liberals coming in and fucking everything up when it comes to the big...
And as for the Libertarian Party, they're basically the Church of Scientology of American politics, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you see the two candidates they trotted out in 2016 are the biggest jokes.
Yeah.
Did not really know much about what they were talking about.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to this, we still have Florida Senate race. Where it's Bill Nelson, the incumbent, going against Rick Scott, where Rick Scott is the current governor, who just has a ton of money he can throw at this. But hopefully the people in Florida realize, the Parkland shooting happened on Rick Scott's watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we have here. I think that's pretty much it. There's some local Florida stuff, but... those are sort of the big primary things.
Oh, there's also who is it? Beto O'Rourke, who's running for, and what state is he running
Texas.
In?
Texas. He's going against Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz, yeah. Have you seen,
I saw a good gif of somebody morphing Ted Cruz's face into the grandpa from the Munsters. And it totally looks convincing.
Totally works.
Yeah.
He just
For those you don't. Yeah, have you seen what they've been trying to do, what Ted Cruz and the GOP have been trying to do to sort of, I don't want to use the word slander, but sort of try and make Beto O'Rourke look bad? They're trying to say, he used to be in a band, and trying to use that as a negative against him.
Seriously?
That's when they're reaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like and when they...
The responses were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like how a lot of these Democratic Socialists, they want Medicare for all. Look how terrible they are. It's No, that's not a terrible thing. Like,
yeah, Sean Hannity tried to put up like Ocasio-Cortez's political plan, like her what was it, like her 10-point plan, on her 10-point program. Yeah, and put it, and Sean Hannity put it on his show to like make it this big scary thing, and then it completely fucking backfired. Because
actually, this sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think people have been doing polls and sort of come to realize, actually, like, most of America actually is interested in the Medicare for All plan.
Yeah.
Even Republicans, like a majority, are fine with it.
Yeah, I, for the record, no, actually, that's not a problem either. I've actually found that if you are willing to sit down with a Republican and explain to them the concept of socialized medicine, how it works... You know, in just a down-to-earth, not pretentious, you know, and not in, like, a way where you're looking down on them, even you will find that they will come around pretty easily.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, what's that card you probably have in your wallet that you got at birth, that number you got?
Social Security?
Social.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also that and the fact that, you know, now... We have the internet, and we can easily talk to someone who lives in a country with universal health care and find out that it's actually not that bad.
Yeah, all the lies we've been told are just that, lies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, like, there's the waiting thing. Like, oh, yeah, we don't wait ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, as, you know, as Phil himself can tell you, on occasion, yes, there will be weight issues, but it's normally the really bad waits are for, like, elective procedures, like a tit job or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go there for, like, a, you know, just if you go there, we can have a runny nose and you have a cold, yeah, you're going to wait a little while.
Yeah.
You know, if you go there and your arm is bleeding, yeah, they're going to take care of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called triage.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, most of these people that are talking about this grew up watching MASH. What the hell?
Yeah.
It's not a foreign concept here.
Yeah, but anyway. All right, so next story after that. Former governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie.
Mr. Beachman.
Jesus Christ, what did he do?
He is now currently under investigation over being involved with a Malaysian money laundering scheme.
Yeah.
Shocking.
This whole thing is kind of weird. So, yeah, he is the latest from the Trump circle that is under investigation. By federal officials, I'm not sure from where, Department of Justice, I guess.
Boy, they're busy these days.
This involves a person named Joe Low, J-H-O-L-O-W, who's been charged by the U.S. Department of Justice with money laundering in what could be one of the largest financial frauds in history. He's accused of having a role in the alleged embezzlement of $4.5 billion from a Malaysian fund known as One Malaysia Development BHD. And he's being harbored in China currently, and his family's wealth is estimated to be about $1.7 billion. So how does Chris Christie get involved with this? So they're investigating whether Low used intermediaries to launder tens of millions of dollars he used to pay a legal team, which includes Chris Christie.
Yep.
His second and final term as governor ran out in January, succeeded by Phil Murphy. He's been a contributor to ABC News and has gone back into law, which he set up the Christie Law Firm, LLC, in April. It's unknown how many clients he has, who they are, but we know that Lowe is one of them. Let's see, who else is involved? The rest of the team of lawyers and consultants for Lowe includes longtime Trump lawyer Mark Kasowitz. That's the guy with the angry emails, right? Bobby Birchfield, a lawyer who served as Trump Organization's outside ethics advisor, and Ed Rogers, a Washington lobbyist with close ties to the Republican Party. Huge surprises. All of the attorneys have ties to the president, and obviously Chris Christie does as well. Let's see, they are also looking into whether rapper Pres Mitchell played any role in helping Low to make the payments. So this whole thing is just...
It's kind of convoluted, but basically there's a money trail that leads to Chris Christie. and that's what they're trying to find out.
There's some way that Leo DiCaprio is also involved.
Might be involved.
Yeah, like one of the production companies that has financed his movies.
Yeah, might have been involved in some money laundering or something. Yeah, that's the that's the thing with money laundering is because the money changes hands so often that it takes time to pick up on the scent and to be able to get like a good timeline together.
Yep.
But
and then they'll like deliberately like funnel it through some companies that have nothing to do with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just so the trail goes past them as well.
Yeah.
Implicates companies that don't really have any business being in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but...
Yeah.
Not that I know much about these things.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, all right, so finally back now to what I was referring to earlier. Student loan debt. It's one of the biggest problems we have in the U.S. It is pretty much the weight that is crushing the millennial generation.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going into the higher-end degrees for... legal stuff, school, medical stuff, all that sort of thing.
And the worst part is that the political establishment absolutely fucking refuses to acknowledge it.
Yeah, Obama did some work, had set up the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau.
Yeah. Which
includes a part of it dedicated to student loans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
like, kill that when he got into office?
Well, we're fixing working to get... on it. Yeah. Yeah, because this week the top student loan watchdog actually quit in protest of the Trump administration.
Yeah, they have the letter here you can read. It's a few pages, but yeah, basically one of the quotes they have here, unfortunately under your leadership, the Bureau has abandoned the very consumers it is tasked by Congress with protecting.
Mm.
Instead, you've used the Bureau to serve the wishes of the most powerful financial companies in America.
Mm.
Which is not how it's supposed to work.
Yep.
Nope.
But yeah, it's who is this? Seth Frotman. Had been working in the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau for several years. I think over the past 3 years, it's been particularly focused on student loans.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that is this huge weight that is just crushing people that have been to school in the last like 20 years at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My solution is to just have all the students stop paying their loan, their debt, their payments just en masse.
Yeah.
Just tell them to fuck you, because I'm going to be completely honest with you. Debt collection agencies are fucking parasites.
Okay?
They are
the worst of the worst.
And
they will do everything they can, both legally and illegally, to try and get that money out of you. If that includes threatening phone calls in the middle of the night, they'll fucking do it, and have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely watch the Last Week Tonight segment on this stuff
mm-hmm.
from a few years ago, and it will really highlight the problem that has been going on, because a lot of these companies are, you know, bullshit companies that buys this stuff for next to nothing, essentially.
Yeah.
It essentially has your personal information to try to wring that money out of you, even if you've maybe technically already paid it,
or it's been forgiven
in some way, or written off. And they obviously don't know that. They just have this list of information of people and how much money they were supposed to pay at some point.
They'll know if it's been written off because they know the statute of limitations on these things.
Yeah,
and then they'll trick people into making another payment, and that makes the account active again. And then they're stuck on the hook for another 7 years.
Yep.
It's sort of a thing that I think eventually, if we get the right people in leadership, that we'll have to forgive a significant part of this, the loans.
Yeah, we'll have to, because
like
if you're paying it for
a certain amount of years, there should be a point where it's like, okay, the rest of this is, you know, forgiven because you've served your time.
We'll reimburse you, you know, because literally at this point, it is causing a significant effect on our economy.
Mm-hmm.
So many people coming out of college, whether they get the degree or not, are essentially having to live as poor people.
Yeah.
If they're not getting the right jobs that are paying them well more than what they have to pay for loans.
Yeah.
And that's not how you get a successful group of people to the right parts of their lives.
So next up, we got a story that, let's be honest, it's going to fucking bring back some bad flashbacks for a lot of people. Neo-Nazis are rioting in the German city of Chemnitz.
I'm really surprised they're able to not flourish there, but just exist there.
Well, yeah. I actually can kind of go a bit more in detail into that. So, Chemnitz, do you know where Chemnitz is located in Germany?
No.
It's on the eastern side.
Okay.
Where the former German Democratic Republic was. East Germany, as everybody used to call it.
Yeah. Part of this also is that the far right has been increasing their share of the parliament in Germany.
Yeah, after the refugee crisis, and to be completely honest, and even like some of the people who were like, okay, so like for one thing, I just want to point, if you ever go on YouTube, look up a guy named Three Arrows. He's a social democrat and a historian in Germany. And he has a lot of stuff that he does. Basically, his whole existence on YouTube is defined by him trying to actively debunk far-right bullshit. And he did one about the refugee crisis, and he basically said that if there is one big issue, it's that Chancellor Merkel may have bitten off a bit more than she could chew, and that maybe letting in a million refugees all at once may have been a problem. But basically the reason this got particularly, this whole riot started, was because apparently one or two refugees, maybe Syrian refugees, or they came in when the Syrian refugees killed a German girl. And
that sounds like something happened here in the U.S.
Yeah, and it just basically set off this riot in Chemnitz. And the thing about, like I said, Chemnitz is formerly part of East Germany. And if you've ever looked or studied anything about what was going on in East Germany during the German reunification, basically, there was a lot of stuff about East Germany that sucked. But one of the good things it had going for them was its very generous welfare and social safety net. And when German unification happened, it basically, all of that was gone. And so all of a sudden you had these very disenchanted, poor young people suddenly showing up in what was formerly a government that was espousing communism. And they're looking for something to react to, something maybe on the extreme side. And so they ended up getting attracted to Nazism. And if you get a chance, there's a great miniseries on Netflix that's called, I'm trying to remember what it was called, but it's basically about the formation of a terrorist group called the National Socialist Underground that sprung up in East Germany in the early 90s and has been considered responsible for the death of like 30 people.
And trying to find any specific documentary in Netflix is kind of hard.
Yeah, but it's not a documentary. Well, it's not a documentary. It's a docudrama. Okay. Because apparently the trials for these people are still ongoing, but they have a lot of facts that they can use. And, yeah, there's a reason why they started springing up in East Germany. And, unfortunately, this is sort of a symptom of that. A lot of modern Germans will tell you about, so like, as everybody knows, the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, right? But they still often talk about what they call the wall in the mind, because even though Germany has been a single country for
30 years?
30 years now, there are still like some significant like cultural differences between the two sides even to this day. And again, this is just part of it.
Yeah, probably not as much people mixing.
Yeah.
Here in the U.S.
Yeah, and the thing you also have to remember about the far right in Germany is almost all of them have to do it in a roundabout way. Because as everybody knows, Germany doesn't take too kindly to any kind of Nazi symbolism that they find. Yeah. Swastikas or banners.
So I think they're starting to loosen up that stuff a little bit, especially when it comes to media.
Well, hopefully this fixes things.
Well, mostly in artistic and educational purposes. But they still do not tolerate it in a political sense in any way. If you try to see Heil in the middle of Berlin, your ass will get tackled by the cops, because again, they don't take that shit lightly. They know what happens when they take that shit lightly, and they've paid for it for years afterwards.
These people have been doing.
Yeah. So you know what they'll do instead of flying the swastika? They'll fly the old Prussian flag with the Iron Cross in the middle. Or, you know what else they'll fly? The Confederate flag.
That should be a fucking sign, shouldn't it?
Yeah. And sort of like what happened with Charlottesville, there's particularly even one person that ended up getting killed in this violence.
Yeah.
That is sort of inflamed things even more.
Yeah. They need to be careful, because if they're not careful, it's going to be another fucking Kristallnacht, and you don't want that at all. I mean, we aren't at the point where someone has burned down the Reichstag yet, but you know, you want to kind of nip this shit in the bud while you can, and with the greatest ruthlessness and the greatest force. You got to bring the fucking hammer down.
Yeah,
and it's kind of weird. This is all
Nazis exist to be killed, period.
Yeah.
And it's all on Angela Merkel's kind of head at this point.
Yeah.
In a weird roundabout way of trying to curb this really nasty side that's starting to show in Germany.
Mm-hmm. But
it's not
anyway.
Something that any one person really should have to tell people to stop and try and fix these problems.
Yeah. Remember, Antifa was born in Germany. So, and they're still down there. So don't lose hope just yet. But, all right, so next up, Colin Kaepernick. He has had issues with the NFL for a while now. Some of it has to do with his political views. Some of it doesn't. But basically, there is now considered that his grievance has enough evidence too that he may be able to bring the NFL to trial.
Yep. I
think the best evidence is some of the mutants that are playing QB in the league right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a football guy, but there are some real scrubs out there, and to say that Kaepernick isn't better than any of them, that's a smoking gun.
Which is a real hard thing to argue online when people are so blind to facts. Because sports fandom is a really toxic thing. Especially when it comes to people.
Well, it can be, but
Which is weird, because sports, there's an intrinsic element there called statistics, and they never lie. Yeah.
But also, deep down, all of these people are nerds. And nerds do not handle
rejection
facts,
well.
Rejecting their view of things.
We plainly know, having experienced it ourselves in the gaming world.
So
this whole grievance is centered around being blackballed from the league. And so there has been an arbitrator that has been going over this case, trying to see sort of what merit it has, and has figured out there's enough evidence that we can go to trial over this. Sufficient evidence of collusion is sort of what they have. They believe they have, which definitely makes a lot of sense, because the league is essentially bending their will to Trump. Just keeps pushing this narrative that they're protesting the national anthem, which is not at all what they're doing. It's intentional misdirect, because they're protesting the violence with police.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, you know who it was that suggested to do the take a knee to Colin Kaepernick? It was a fucking veteran of the Marines. The Marine Corps. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And guess what? He was also... Nobody noticed he was even sitting for the National Anthem until a few weeks after he started it.
Yeah.
It's sort of a thing of... That's like outrage culture right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, they... I think he's even happened recently, like the other players with the 49ers that were kneeling with him. Mm-hmm. They've all... are no longer with that team anymore. I think the last one got cut recently. So, yeah. The teams you sort of assumed were progressive in terms of supporting those guys, you know what? Not really so much when they feel like paying attention to that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, hope he pushes that forward.
And I hope he fucking wins.
Yeah.
Or gets a settlement or something. Because it's getting obvious now, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Anyway, okay.
Yeah,
so that is basically yeah. Go ahead.
There are quarterbacks who haven't thrown a football in years that were getting hired, in the point that he was available.
Yeah. But all right. So final. So that was basically the end of the serious portion of the show.
It's like,
now we just get to the ridiculous stuff.
Yes, time to get the ridiculous stuff. The first one starting in Phil's country, Canada.
Are you saying this isn't a serious topic?
Yeah.
Well, you'll see how serious in a minute.
Yeah. Specifically in Toronto, which, again, is not Canada's capital city. I don't know why so many people make that mistake.
It's the easiest one to get to.
Yeah. It's Ottawa.
Yep.
Ottawa is Canada's capital city.
Specifically placed so far inland just in case the U.S. decided to invade.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's basically like a good 50% of the inhabitants of British Columbia are basically descendants of people who fled during the revolution. So, but yeah, Toronto is going to be the first city to host North America's first sex doll brothel.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I like the title in this article. It says first known sex doll brothel.
No!
But yeah, so they're going to have six silicone-made dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the company behind is Aura Dolls, A-U-R-A. The vision is to bring a new way to achieve sexual needs, quote, without many restrictions and limitations that a real partner may come with.
Giggity.
They're going to open a shopping plaza on Yonge Street, south of Shepherd Avenue.
Of course.
God damn it.
On September 8th. They don't have exact locations just yet, but when they start booking, they will be announcing that stuff. But yeah, six female sex dolls advertise, quote, exotic girls to cater everyone's choice of beauty. We tried really hard to try to cater to every single standard of beauty. We have different ethnicity, different eye colors, different hair color. And they plan on expanding their collection in the near future. And we'll have male dolls at some point. Made of silicone. In order to sanitize the dolls, they said a three-step routine is used after each booking.
That doesn't sound like enough steps.
Fucking job.
However, staff still highly recommend the use of condoms.
No, people can't even keep the Slurpee machine clean at a 7-Eleven. How?
Yeah, it's like you don't want either the first one up or you're never going to this thing. You got to be there the first day or you're not going ever.
you definitely don't want to be the last one of the day.
Yeah,
unless they're dipping these things in a fucking pool of lye, there is no reason why you should stick your dick in one of these things.
How much does it cost, you might ask? An hour with one doll costs $80. Two dolls, they double it up to $160. For an hour, it's $120 with one doll. And the maximum listed time is 4 hours for $480 per doll.
Jesus.
Well, because once you go past the four-hour mark, that's a priapism and you need medical attention.
Yeah. At that point, you've moved in.
Yeah.
And you're going to... That's not even, that's too much for rent for even 4 hours.
Yes.
480 for 4 hours. Jesus Christ.
Now, I'm guessing this is completely legal under Toronto law. So,
I assume so.
Unless there are some new laws coming in to deal with this.
Yeah, they're going to have separate exit and entry doors to ensure, quote, maximum privacy for customers.
Also free parking in the rear.
Yeah, while the business does plan on having staff on site, they, quote, should not have any interaction.
No shit.
Yes.
Because then it would actually become a brothel, and that is illegal.
Yeah, spokesperson.
This is kind of a misnomer.
Yeah, a spokesperson for the city confirmed to the Toronto Star here, they have no record of a municipal business license for the establishment. However, they said the business is operating within the law. The only law stating with anything to do with the dolls is that it has to meet a height requirement. It can't resemble a child. We made sure that all the dolls fit the criteria and don't resemble children. Councillor John Fillion said his staff will be throwing the book at Aura dolls for everything they can. I still got people studying to see what's legal and what isn't.
So, they don't even know.
Yeah, they're like, all right, we've got to find anything so we can get rid of this stupid thing. He said if the bylaw that I brought in 20 years ago still exists, it would prohibit this. There's legal issues. And I guess the phone is ringing off the hook at his office. So
I think the market will figure out whether this is a success.
I mean, there's some great temp jobs for lawyers in the Toronto area for a while.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So this is
they sort that whole thing out.
This is the big battle that's going on in Toronto.
Yeah.
Oh, they got a nice poll here. Would you have a problem with a sex doll brothel opening in your city?
Why the hell not?
No, it's not illegal.
Not at all.
Let's see, there's yes, it objects to women, and I wouldn't want it in my community, and maybe it makes me deeply uncomfortable. So let's see, winning is no, it's not illegal, 55.57% of 700 people, 28% said yes, and 16% said it makes them uncomfortable. But maybe, I don't know.
They didn't say no, yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable just thinking that somebody would catch three of the top eight by... going in there once.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, if you're going for the variety pack, you may as well.
Yeah. See, for the record, the prostitution laws in Canada are actually different to how they are down in the U.S. because technically prostitution is not illegal, but soliciting. At least I believe that's how the law works, but. Whereas here in the U.S., it varies from, you know, state to state. But anyway. All right. So next up.
Hungry?
Yeah. So Southeast Asia, they're, you know, especially like Japan and China, when they get like major, you know, American or Western brands to start over there, they'll usually have a bunch of like novelty flavors that they like to throw out there. Some of them tend to stick
infamous for this.
Yeah, Kit Kats especially having like fucking green tea flavor.
Yes, they do.
Or like pizza, for example. In Japan, they have Pizza Law, and you know what? You know, in Pizza Law, they're the ones who have like the fucking sausage stuffed crust or the you know the hot dog crust
they
pizzas.
Have, like, mayo pizza.
Yeah, mayo and eggs and strawberries and shit. Yeah.
Japan don't give a fuck.
Nope, they don't give a fuck.
Well, I guess that's why they have those fancy toilets to clean up the aftermath. Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, hey, beats whatever lives in the U.S.
anyway.
I have
to go on and find pantry and see what's available, you prick.
Yeah. But anyway, Oreos is fixing to join that particular auspicious group because in China, they're going to be coming out with new flavors of hot wings chicken and wasabi.
Yep.
Oh, I would buy the shit out of those.
Yeah.
Oreo? Yes, Oreo. Yes, yeah. Oreo.
Ew.
Yeah. No. Oreo's infamous, at least here, for weird flavors like Peeps.
Peeps. But see, here's the difference, though. Those are all sweet. to varying degrees.
Right.
We're talking about two of the most mouth-burning things you can have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the...
No, but wasabi you can mix with some sweet things.
Yeah, they do. They do have, like, wasabi ice cream and stuff, and that's pretty good, but I'm...
Right?
But fucking hot chicken, like... You know, that just... It don't sound right.
Anything chicken and Oreos doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, none of this surprises me because I know that McDonald's cheeseburger Oreos exist.
What?
Yeah, I heard that, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay, I'm done with this world, you guys. What the hell is going on here?
Stop the world you want off.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
This is the Western influence on China. You're take our garbage food. We'll put all the fucking flavors we can in there.
And then and you make all of our shit for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to go and say nope.
Yeah. I mean, there's already... I mean, for fuck's sake, why would you want to mess with the original Oreo? It's basically...
Well, they probably
messing
have
with
that.
The original Oreo.
Well, I know they do.
Oreos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that and the double stuffed ones, yeah. But...
If you want to get spicy, you get the double stuff. That's...
Yeah.
That's experimenting.
Just, yeah, the double stuffed is... All the double stuff really is just sort of taking out the middleman and, you know, doing what people usually do.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stack two of them on top of each other.
Yeah. But, yeah. For some reason, Southeast Asia, they fucking love this type of shit. It's like... Yeah. Like, just like... Look at, like, in Japan, for example, all the different types of novelty candy that they have.
Yeah.
And then realize that we don't really have much of them over in the U.S., and the world is a sadder place because of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but, I think if you want to follow somebody that's, like, into this shit, I think it's Shane Bettenhausen tweets mm-hmm. all the time about weird flavors of Oreos that he gets, and I don't think he... I don't think most of them are any good. But it's still, like, the idea of just getting this weird shit.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up, Lego, the Lego company. So, you know, Lego is one of those things that it's managed to be a toy that kind of goes with you through into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Either your kids have it or you start getting into, like, the bigger projects.
Yeah, the $500 sets.
Yeah. Or, you know, you're well acquainted, or, you know, the bottom of your foot is well acquainted with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've all done that at one point, haven't we?
I can honestly say I've managed to avoid it all this time.
Liar.
You're lucky.
Yeah, but anyway, they built the Bugatti Chiron out of Lego. I actually did not know that Bugatti, is that, that's a car.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Automobile manufacturer?
You make the Veyron?
2.6
yeah,
million
I actually, I that's funny because I actually okay. So, do you guys watch Game Grumps every so often?
Now and then, but I'm watching.
Yeah, they did that. There was that three-parter they did with what was it? Adventure Boy, I think it was called. It was like that really hard-ass like NES game that was made fairly recently, and it was like it's super hard and. So Aaron Hansen gets up to the first bosses, which is like that giant purple flower that shoots needles and has like vines and shit. And there's a point where he's like, he dies constantly trying to kill this thing. And so he finally resorts to just making up a monologue whenever he starts fighting it because apparently it helps him concentrate better. And apparently one of his monologues was about how he recklessly stole a car that didn't belong to him, a 1978 Bugatti. And he's like, wait, that's not even a real car. I made that up. And then he dies. So you gotta, if you ever get a chance, watch that because it is the funniest. You can literally hear him slowly losing his shit over 15 minutes because this thing just keeps mercilessly killing him within 5 seconds. Also, Aaron Hansen sucks at video games. I think that's common knowledge now. But
part of the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this Bugatti Chiron is a really amazing build. I think it's about, it's over 1 million pieces. They're Lego Technic pieces, so there are some mechanical things in there that their engine is made of Lego. Generates about 5.3 horsepower.
Oh, wow, so you can actually drive this thing?
It has a theoretical top speed about 18 miles per hour, but the actual ones they're getting are about 12 miles per hour. And it weighs about 3,000 pounds.
Oh. So what about did the thing have tires?
Yeah, it has actual tires.
Oh, okay. I was fixing to say. Lego.
There are pictures in this, as you can see, like the steering wheel is made out of Lego, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The seat's made out of Lego.
Yeah. Very
uncomfortable. Not want to set in.
Yeah, you have to get a, tell them, I got some padding. I got to put down that. It took 20 people 6 months to put it together. 1,800 parts. That's for the Bugatti Chiron. Took around the same amount of time, but over 1 million Lego Technic pieces, 2,300 power function motors, 4,000 gear wheels, and 2,000 axles. Functional speedometer made from Lego. Even has a working active rear spoiler that pops up on the back end of the car, just like the real thing.
Wow.
The Lego doors, headlights, taillights, steering wheel, and brake pedal all work too. There's no acceleration pedal, according to Top Gear.
Was there a reason they did this? Like, was there a sponsorship, or was, like, there a Guinness World Record thing they were trying to do?
I assume it's probably partnership and just parts marketing. They like to work.
Well, there's also like the smaller
build really cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're also doing like a smaller kit that you can get for yourself. Yeah. So like not a life size one, but a mini one.
Yeah.
You
could build, and they got yourself, specs so. Here for how the two compare. So the weight's about 3,300 pounds. The real one's 4,400 pounds. Top speed 18 miles for the Lego. 261 miles per hour for the Bugatti Chiron.
The real one.
0 to 60 mile per hour time is infinite for the Lego.
Because it doesn't 2.5
seconds for the real thing.
The real Chiron. Chiron.
Yeah, the engine is 2,300 Lego power function electric motors, and the Bugatti is quad turbocharged W16. Yeah, horsepower is 5.3 for the Lego, 1,479 for the real thing. Torque is 92 nanometers, 1,600 for the Bugatti.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit higher.
And it's a rear-wheel drive for the Lego, and all-wheel for the Bugatti. So, yeah.
Wow.
It's still a
cool ass build.
Yeah, and it looks really nice,
it is.
Too.
See, again, it's like I said, Lego is one of those toys that kind of goes with you as you get older.
Yeah, it really makes me wish we had a Lego store around here.
Because
you can go there and like specifically get like certain colors of pieces, certain types, all that sort of stuff.
Let me tell you, one of my fondest childhood memories was going to Toys R Us, which of course doesn't exist anymore. Isn't that just a shame? And going to the Lego section, where you would have just all these shelves of all of these, just all of the Lego. It was all the Lego. It was right there in front of you. And remember, this was back in the early 90s, so it was like the basic sets, pirate, space, airport, that type of stuff.
Or just like the general set that's just, here's a bunch of pieces.
The starter kit.
Yeah. Or you do even better, and maybe you couldn't get all of it then, but you could get the catalog.
Yeah.
And the catalog was cool because they would build these elaborate dioramas using them to sort of add various Lego sets, and it was awesome.
Here's what you could make if you weren't a stupid kid.
Yeah.
Now you go to like Toys R Us or Walmart or any of the places they have it, and it's like, oh shit, that's an awesome Millennium Falcon. It's $500. Fuck.
Well, actually, if you go to Toys R Us, you're going to find like a bear or a homeless person because they don't exist anymore.
It's a giraffe costume.
Yeah.
And a giraffe. A homeless person in a giraffe costume. Yeah.
You can just buy it on Amazon now.
Yeah.
That's what everybody else. Or go to Target. I think Target seems to be replacing Toys R Us at this point.
They're trying to, which, for the record, if that's what they're doing, then good for them. But, all right, so next up, ISS. Remind me, what is
International
that?
Space Station.
Oh, yes, the International Space... Sorry, as I mentioned a long earlier, because I'm going into the medical coding field, there's like an alphabet soup of shit that I have to learn, and... Mm-hmm. And I can get these abbreviations messed up, but yeah, the International Space Station...
ISIS.
Just don't do that.
But
okay, $800 for the Millennium Falcon, 7,500 pieces. Amazon Prime support, so you can get it in 2 days.
Yeah, but anyway, the International Space Station, they discovered that they actually had a small air leak, and you know, of course, you're out in the middle of space. That shit, that's something that can grow into a massive problem if you don't deal with it immediately. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you could say what you were going to say. It sucks.
Yeah. So you know what they did? Well, one guy plugged it up with their thumb before using some tape. And it worked.
Yeah, so...
I don't see why it wouldn't.
Like, you would think...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you thinking, you know, it's the International Space Station and they have, like, a problem like this, you would expect that the solution would be equally complicated or something. For some reason, like, that's just a picture we have in our heads, because it's space-related and everything, but no, they just put a piece of tape over it, and...
That's why you gotta watch Apollo 13.
Yeah.
Right, sometimes they just have a bunch of tools they can use, and the solutions can be just really easy stuff. Same shit you...
Well, when you're out there in space, and when you're out there in space, and it takes, like, months to get new supplies and shit, I mean, yeah, you probably become an expert in just jerry-rigging stuff.
Yeah. So it was a small leak, I think, from space debris that hit the station at some point. Because if you think that's the around the Earth, that there's just nothingness, it's not. It's
no.
Dead satellites, busted up pieces and shit, as well as working
pieces out. Of old space shuttles and like
Elon Musk's Tesla.
floating around the Earth as this makeshift like. Just garbage.
Yeah, and it's becoming an increasingly major problem. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this this anime called Planetess. Yeah. It's literally about people who make a living basically as space garbage men.
Yep.
They pick up space junk.
There's companies starting up to do exactly that.
They
now.
Pick it up and process it. And
there's a movie even about that as well. I forget which one it was. The one where like they're supposed to be like repairing a satellite or something, and it gets hit by space debris. I forget what it's called.
Wasn't that Gravity?
Yeah, Gravity. Yeah,
Gravity
or Gravitation? It was the George Clooney movie, right?
Yeah,
that one. But eventually, like you said, there are already agencies gearing up to do that, and. They're going to have to, because as we go out in space more and more, this has become a bigger problem. Because remember, it's not just that stuff's out there. It's that it's orbiting the Earth in, like, thousands of millions per second. Yep. And I don't care how flat and broad and small a screw may be.
Yeah.
A screw coming at you at a million miles per second is going to put a hole in you.
Yeah, I mean, the ISS is built pretty well, and you can see that this caused a small hole.
Yep.
It's just one little thing.
Yep.
So this hole, if it went unchecked, they would have run out of air in about 18 days.
Yeah.
So not a huge issue, but also something that would have been catastrophic.
If they hadn't caught it sooner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they just kind of went around trying to figure out where it was and try and find it and did the whole thing we know about... what was it, Sweden? I think the little girl putting her thumb in the
dike. Yeah, and that was, I'm pretty sure that was actually the Netherlands. But,
okay, Netherlands. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't.
But I'm guessing, so did they explain how they actually found the hole?
Yeah, they just went around and started feeling up the walls.
Oh. I was thinking it was going to be like one of those pin-sized holes that, like, okay, have you guys, this is... something my dad does. Have you guys ever had like a puncture in one of your tires and maybe the nail's still there, but you can't find it, or maybe the nail isn't there and you can't find the hole. Yeah. So you get like a thing of soapy water and a paintbrush, yep. and you rub it over the tire to find where the air bubble comes out. I was wondering if that's what they did.
Yeah, so they found this out overnight while the astronauts were sleeping. Mm-hmm. Once they woke up, they spent the first few hours of the day hunting it down. Located aboard the orbital section of Soyuz spacecraft MS-09. Mm. They are not 100% sure what it was, but it's about 2 millimeters wide. And NASA actually thinks it might have been like a small micrometeorite punching a hole in the wall. Yeah, so they simply plugged a hole with the finger from, ESA astronaut Alexander Gerst. It's obviously not a long-term solution. And so they used epoxy and Kapton tape, a form of high-strength tape commonly used in spacecraft to seal the breach. And now the
thinking they were just using some Scotch tape. I thought they were just using some Scotch tape or something.
They're using spacecraft tape. And the
Kapton tape is like, it's like duct tape, but
Cool.
The air pressure inside the station is now stable, so the seal's working, and obviously they're trying to figure out a better permanent solution.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Trust me, that'll hold.
Yeah. all right.
Anyway.
Well, finally, we got some sad news for Phil. Mr. Robot will end with its fourth season in 2019.
Yeah, I'm okay with this, actually.
Yeah.
It's,
thank you for undercutting my whole theme there, Phil.
Well, I mean, Mr. Robot go, but it's like, where the story is right now, there really is only one season of content.
Yeah, I guess.
So it's like, it was kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
Also, it's probably going to end with Trump getting elected, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways.
Yeah.
yeah, I can't wait for this. I am caught up, so yeah.
All right.
Teresa, if you haven't watched Mr. Robot yet, what the hell are you
waiting
for?
Oh my god, I'm just going to watch it on my own, because I'm tired of waiting.
Yeah, just watch it on your own.
Yeah, just watch it on your own, and then if he ever actually wants to continue, he's like, oh yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Act surprised.
Yeah.
But,
it's good stuff, I can't wait.
But anyway, okay. In other entertainment news, Orson Welles, he was a legendary actor, writer, director, producer. Pretty much, like, for the longest time, he was one of only two people in Hollywood who actually did that. The other one was Ed Wood, but...
That's a story for another day.
Yeah. but probably his most... entertainment goes, he probably has two very famous things that he's famous for. Probably the one... And everyone immediately hears, he knows about, of course, is Citizen Kane, which is it's considered a cinematic classic for a lot of good reasons, and it actually still holds up pretty well, even though let's face it, the twist has been ruined for decades now.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty much been meme.
It's his sled. Rosebud is the name of his sled. There, I went in.
Yeah, no, the Simpsons, guys around the Simpsons have said like that's the number two most influential thing on them. Mm-hmm. They used a lot of like camera tricks and such that Citizen Kane innovated with.
Yeah, it's also basically a unofficial biography of William Randolph Hearst, which is kind of why the movie got in trouble, why it had trouble getting into theaters when it first came out. But the other big thing that Orson Welles is known for is, of course, his I think it was 1920s, 1930s radio rendition of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. it was basically they decided to, and this was a pretty brilliant idea on Orson Welles' part, because I mean, I'm pretty sure it hadn't been done like this before. They did it Yeah,
you would have had the mass chaos and panic before then.
Yeah, but basically it was they did it as a sort of a mockumentary style, you know, as a series of radio broadcasts as the aliens were invading. And unfortunately, a few people thought it was real, including that one country bumpkin who shot a water tower because he thought it was a flying saucer. But anyway, he did a bunch of other stuff, and unfortunately in later years, his... fortunes took a downturn. There's that infamous commercial he did for, what was it, for peas, I think it was. Like, there's a...
Yeah.
And then, of course, his last film role before he died was being a voice on the Transformers movie. They finally found his last film. It's being finished, and it's going to be coming to Netflix in November. November 2nd, specifically.
Yeah, it's called Other Side of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Was started 48 years ago. It's going to be unveiling at the Venice Film Festival after Netflix sort of funded the painstaking process of re-editing and rewriting it.
Mm-hmm.
To finish it up. It'll also be coming out with a Netflix documentary about Wells called They'll Love Me When I'm Dead.
Mm-hmm.
See, The Other Side of the Wind will also be releasing in select theaters at the same time as on Netflix, so November 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
For Oscar consideration.
Yeah. It'll be
for your Oscar consideration.
There's a trailer out now, so you can check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Like film history stuff to see it come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Netflix is the one that ponied up the money to do it.
Mm-hmm. So Orson Welles was like one of the first major film auteurs. And because of that, you know, his prospects got weaker as the studio system became more stringent. So, but anyway, it's going to be neat to see. Next up, VRV. They're going to be teaming up with Nickelodeon, and they're going to be offering many of Nickelodeon's classic shows for $6 a month. So, Ren and Stimpy, Rugrats, all the stuff you loved growing up.
Yeah, it's going to be what they call Nick Splat channel. I guess they offer sort of standalone channels. And the Splat, I think, is a channel that Nickelodeon had, or like a block of programming they had late nights in 2011, where they aired a lot of their classic stuff. So the things they mentioned, they're going to have a rotating selection of 300 episodes from All That, Are You Afraid of the Dark, Clarissa Explains It All, Doug, Keenan and Kel, Legend of the Hidden Temple, Rocko's Modern Life, let's see, Ariel Monsters, Cat Dog, The Angry Beavers, The Wild Thornberries. It's also going to be included in the VRV specific premium subscription for $10, which I think includes some of the other stuff. Cartoon Hangover, Crunchyroll, Drama Fever, and Shudder also have their own like subscription channels on there.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's a damn good lineup.
Subscriptioned out, to be honest.
Yeah, but I'm not. I understand that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's one of those many sort of streaming apps you probably have on PS4, Xbox One. Any number of, TV connected devices like Apple TV, and the various Amazon stuff and all that.
Yeah.
This is pretty neat.
Yeah. Legends of the Hidden Temple, the one show I love to watch but never would want to be a part of.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a couple reasons for that. The first big reason is I read somewhere from some people who were actually like, who back then they were kids, were contestants on that show. And apparently, before you went on the service table, they would basically just fill you up on pizza and soda and then expect you to go out under all those hot lights to do all those physical challenges.
Ugh. Yeah.
And then, of course, the other major reason is the obvious one. The temple guards. Mm. You remember the temple guards, don't you?
Yep.
Basically, if you went through the temple, which was like the centerpiece of the whole show, and yes, the temple was kind of the centerpiece of the show because it was neat. They had all those different rooms where they had all different things you had to do to get out of them. For some reason, it was a big maze, and they changed up the rooms every show. A few of them kept showing up. The one that everybody seems to remember is, the Shrine of the Silver Monkey, which even though it looks really easy, would always stump everyone. But the thing was, you would go in there, and depending on how well you did in the physical challenges, you would have a certain number of medallions. Depending on how well you did, you could have two of them, which meant that you would have two medallions that you could go. Or you could end up with like a medallion and a half, which only gave you like two chances, or just one medallion, and it also gave you two chances. But thing was, is they would have these temple guards, these dudes in crazy jungle native get up that would, you know, hide and, you know, behind hidden doors and in those infamous trees with the arms on them, where you had to like reach down into their mouths to like get like a switch or something, but they would just pop out and scare the ever loving crap out of you.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good gig to scare the shit out of children.
Yep. And finally, last story of the night, DC Universe is officially launching on September 15th, and Titans is premiering on October 12th.
Second.
Subscriptions.
So nice. This is the DC, the big DC streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to launch on September 5th, 15th. They're going to premiere Titans at New York Comic Con on the 3rd of October, and it'll be out on the 12th. They're going to do new episodes every Friday after that.
Yeah.
So it's going to have a lot of their TV stuff, films, comics. Mm-hmm. I think the site probably has more of a list of what they are going to be all offering. But, it's going to be neat to see how this goes. This is going to be $8 a month.
Yeah.
And you can sort of do a pre-order deal now for $74.99. Mm-hmm. For 15 months, you get 3 months free.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I've said it before. I'll say it again. That Titan show just does not, like, it just rubs me the wrong way in just a lot of different ways. Yeah.
It did not please me.
No. Yeah. Why is Starfire dressed up like a street hooker? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I guess they have Batman the Animated Series as part of that as well.
Oh.
The new remastered version of it.
Oh.
That's going to be part of that's
good.
The stuff that I have as far as
that's a legit selling point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I've pretty much just decided on buying that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. All right, well, I do believe we got a show, folks. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, something you want us to write in, have us read on the air, your crazy political conspiracy about the lizard people, maybe, you can write in to us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it written down in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little place of audio shenanery. Yes, I made up a new word, shenanery. On Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, basically where all types of unscripted audio shenanigans like us can be heard and consumed with your mouth ears. So, with that, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo Donalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Yeah, we now live in a world where there will be sex doll brothels. Night, kids.